welcome to this week's episode of the Six Figure Success Club, where we are passionate about taking you from an employee of your small business to six-figure CEO. Today, we are going to be joined by Lauren Selwood, who is a content marketer and strategist, and we are going to be talking about how to use your content to attract your ideal clients. Let's get into it. Lauren, could you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes, so I am a content marketer, strategist, freelance, and I also run a small stationery business selling like bookmarks, notebooks, all that jazz. So that's me in a nutshell.
Thank you so much for joining us. So we are going to spend some time today talking about content and content marketing. I think it's one of those things, obviously we live in a social media world now and it's such a big part of every business, I think, at the moment. But it's one of those things I think we, or business owners generally, struggle with, and there's so much noise around what you should be doing with your content that I think it can get quite overwhelming to know what to do and when should you be posting and what should you be posting. So I'd love to get kind of some of your takes on what you look at when, as a content marketer, kind of what are you looking at when you look at someone's content, what should we be focusing on, that sort of thing.
I think the biggest thing that I see is that business owners are so close to it, so they're like, oh, well, I've seen this one person say I need to post every day, but I've seen someone else say I should only post 3 times a week, or this person said I should post on Instagram, but this person saying I should post on all the channels possible. So I think you see one piece of advice and you think, okay, well, I need to do that, and I need to do this, and I need to do that. But the core thing it comes down to is audience, right? And like your business goals. So if your audience is hanging out on Instagram, that's where you need to hang out to. And then business goals come into it as well. Like if your goal is to increase brand awareness so that when you launch an event you've got this huge community, then it's all about that brand awareness content. If your goal is to get leads and forms filled out on your website, then it's a different style of content. If your goal is to sell notebooks, then again it's a different type of content. So I think it all comes down to goals and who you want to talk to, rather than trying to do everything all at once.
I think I completely agree with that. So doing the work on who's your ideal client, where do they hang out, yep, what content do they like consuming, and getting to grips with what they want and what they need, as opposed, yeah, to focusing on what somebody else is telling you to post.
Yeah, exactly. And what you want to achieve as a business as well, that comes into it. There's no point sort of creating all that like sort of shareable, relatable content that's going to get likes and shares if you want leads, you know? That comes into it. But, you know, if you want leads, then it's got to be a bit deeper rather than surface level stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I find this quite interesting around the concept of kind of like going viral. Having a post that goes viral,
yeah,
isn't necessarily a good thing from things that I've seen. So quite often you might get a post that gets like 1 million views or tens of thousands of views, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to your ideal client. And those, yeah, tens of thousands of people that have watched it might not convert into paying clients. And in my opinion, I think it's better to have lots of your posts doing not as well. I mean, I'm sure they still do great, but going to the right amount of people, right, going to the, yeah, right people, rather than going to a huge number of the wrong people.
Yeah. And I think that's where the whole vanity metric thing comes in. Like, oh, I've got 50,000 followers, that means I'm going to sell out, or that means that I'm going to be fully booked. But it doesn't, because, well, especially on Instagram, I imagine like 50-60% of your followers are probably bot accounts or spam accounts or inactive accounts or something. So just because you've got those 50,000 people doesn't mean that 50,000 people are going to buy your offering. So yeah, it's all about sort of reaching the right people that are actually going to buy. And someone that I think we both follow, Jess, always says that if you've got 50,000 followers and only 1,000 of them buy, or you've got 1,000 followers, but all 1,000 of those people are your people that want your product and want your offering, that the conversion rate is so different there, isn't it? So yeah, thinking about that.
And with a smaller following as well, I think you can create a more tight-knit, engaged community. Like, imagine trying to get to know 50,000 people, but if, right, you've got a following of like less than 5,000, you're going to recognize most of the accounts that are following you, because you're going to see their stuff and you're, yeah, going to notice them because you see them so regularly. And it just fosters, I think, a much better community vibe than having these massive followings.
Yeah, exactly. Like you say, you're going to have very similar people engaging with you on a day-to-day basis on different posts, and you're going to recognize those people. And whether or not that person has bought or not you're just warming them up. You're getting to know them. You're speaking to them by name rather than just like a blind face behind a screen. You know who they are. They know who you are. The likelihood of them buying increases every single time you interact with them.
And also, I think it makes like market research easier as well, because you can talk to, you can have conversations with these people. They're like real people that you can actually like reach out to and speak to and learn what they want and what they would buy and what they think of your products. Whereas, yeah, with the much larger audiences, it's a lot less easy to do.
Yeah. And on that market research note, I previously managed an account that had like over 200K. And we wanted to do some market research. So we put out this survey on stories, their email list, you know, the whole shebang, like, can you complete this survey? It was like 5 questions long. Who are you? What do you do? Why do you follow us? Blah, 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 that sort of thing. I think we had like 30 completions in the space of a month. Whereas I did a similar thing for a client that's got sort of like under 10K, and she had over 300 completions within a month, because even though her audience was what, like 10 times smaller, more than 10 times smaller, the people that followed her knew who she was, knew what she sold, and cared about offering their opinion.
Yeah, and that she would have been able to kind of get in touch with them more directly throughout what she's posting normally. So they feel like they knew her better.
Exactly.
Get a bigger return. That is really interesting. I think the vanity metrics I find very fascinating. Like, thankfully I'm not like that. Like, I don't really want 50,000 followers. It feels like a lot to manage, which is good because I don't have 50,000 followers. but it's an interesting thing that we're in this kind of social media world that we're having to deal with, is like, if you don't have that, have you failed? And I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's definitely possible to build a really successful business with a much smaller following.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like, hitting those like milestones is fun and is exciting, and we should still celebrate that, because, you know, if 10,000 people want to follow you, that's a big achievement. Yeah. Like, that's amazing. But it shouldn't be one of your marketing goals to hit 10,000 followers. You know, it should be a milestone you celebrate, but it shouldn't be something that you're kind of like putting all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, definitely. I think it should definitely be more towards the conversion rate and how many of your audience are actually buying from you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when business owners are kind of approaching their content creation and their strategy, so I like to do everything in quarters. I like to plan everything out for 12 weeks. That's just kind of my corporate head. That's the way I like to work. And is that something you would recommend business owners do with their content, is plan it out ahead of time, and how far in advance, and what can they plan?
I think partly yes, partly no. Goals, definitely quarterly. You know, plan, what do you want to do in Q1, Q2, Q3? What do you want to do for the whole year? Like, by the end of the year, what's the goal you want to hit, like the big milestone? But when it comes to content, people may disagree with this, but I like to plan in 2-week blocks. That's what I do for all my clients, 2-week blocks, because Instagram, it just changes, or every sort of social media, things change. New trends emerge, new memes emerge, new things emerge. Things change in your business that you might need to be reactive towards. If something sells out and you've got content planned for that thing for the next 2 months, then you're going to have to replan all that content because you haven't got anything there left to sell. So yeah, I work in 2-week blocks so that you have space for changing things, because it's all like, proactivity is great, but sometimes we do need to be reactive as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it lets you be a little more spontaneous, I suppose, with the content that you're posting. And also, I feel like planning a whole month of content in one go can feel very overwhelming. That feels like a lot of content, especially when you don't know what you're going to be doing in a month. Like, you might change everything you're doing. Like you said, like, everything that's happening on social media could have changed. But yeah, I like the idea of doing it in 2 blocks. And then, so would you plan out? So you'd look at what you're selling, what you're planning to sell, and then plan your content accordingly with what you're selling.
Yeah, so I have like a sort of a rough plan. So I know that what's happening next month, the month after, like if there's any launches planned, if, you know, I'm releasing something new, or the client is releasing something new, or there's a particular national day that we want to talk about. So I'll have like a really rough plan, but I wouldn't formalize any content until that 2-week mark, just because, you know, it's, like we said, it's easy to move things around and be a bit more reactive in that way.
Yeah, and if there are trends and things that pop up, you want to take advantage of them, because they get much further reach generally on
especially
on Instagram and TikTok. So yeah, giving yourself the freedom to be more reactive and spontaneous, I think, is definitely a benefit.
Yeah, and I think especially if you're a founder creating your own content, you have the beauty of being reactive and just doing whatever you want, essentially, within reason, you know. Like, as a founder of a business, if you're like, oh, there's that crazy Olympics thing that's just happened, I need to talk about it, if it's, you know, relevant to your business, or you can jump on it because, you know, it feels right for your business. Whereas if you're like a huge company that has to go through the hoops and jumps of getting legal approval or making sure that the boss is okay with it, then you don't have that luxury. So I think that's where small businesses can really thrive on social media, is because they don't have to ask for permission to post things.
Yeah, I love that. I think the biggest one I've seen kind of around this, like pop culture wise, is probably with the Eras Tour and the amount of businesses that have done like Taylor Swift related content. Yeah. I'm a huge Swiftie. Any possible excuse to bring up Taylor Swift, I will jump on. But yeah, you have like huge brands that have like jumped on the Taylor Swift bandwagon and are like doing anything to do with the Eras Tour. But the amount of small businesses that I've seen that have dissected her marketing strategy and the way that she launches albums and that sort of thing, I think I found it really interesting from like a business perspective, how popular it's been for anyone that's jumped on like this trend, that those posts have been more popular, I think, because everyone's kind of talking about this at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And you wouldn't see like major supermarkets like Sainsbury's or Tesco jumping on a Taylor Swift meme, would you?
No,
whereas small businesses can get away with that. Like even like, I think it was HelloFresh, who is a fairly big company, but I wouldn't say they're like huge. Mm-hmm. They did like a Taylor Swift campaign, like a billboard. They had a billboard that said, Korma is my boyfriend. Like, even like that, like that's, you know, things like that. I imagine they probably had to jump through a few hoops to get that approved. But like, I don't think there's some companies that you just wouldn't expect to see that sort of thing from.
I love it. But yeah, I think it's great. I think giving yourself that opportunity to jump on the current trends, and whether that's like a TikTok dance or talking about the Eras Tour or talking about the Olympics, which is obviously what's going on at the moment, I think doing that makes business more fun because you get to get involved in what's happening in the world at the moment, and also kind of relieve some of the pressure on you because you're not having to plan content like 12 months in advance.
Yeah, and you don't, like, if you've got like 2 months worth of content planned out and you're like, right, okay, on Tuesday I need to post this educational carousel, but then on Monday evening you see this meme that would be perfect, you're like, oh, well, now I have to move that carousel or reschedule it and create this meme. Like, you don't feel like you have the flexibility to be able to jump on these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely something that we should kind of give ourselves permission to do. Is yeah. One thing I always talk to my clients about is whatever the plan is, you can change the plan. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of whether it's a goal that you've set or the plan that you've created for the week, like the plan, it's a plan. It's not set in stone. It's something that we create so that we know where we're going and how we're spending our time and what we're putting effort into. But you absolutely can and should change the plan if things come up and you want to do something different. Like, that's the benefit of owning your own business. Like, you're not beholden to a boss. Like, you get to decide what you're doing in your business.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it depends as well. Like, I've had a client recently, up until this point, we've shared like educational reels, educational carousels, because in the past, that's what her audience liked. But now her audience isn't growing. So we're like, okay, well, we need to introduce a different type of content. These guys are used to this. They need something new. So for the last month or so, we've been doing a lot of like memes, shareable quotes, and whatnot, just to boost that reach. And it's not like a long-term strategy, but we want this, the next 2 months, to be sort of reach boosting months. So we're pivoting the content so that we can hit that secondary goal, to hit those new audiences before she launches something big. So, you know, you sometimes might need to have a look at the insights and think, ah, I haven't increased in followers in, you know, a little while, or my reach is the same on every single post, I'm not reaching new people. What can I do to change that a little bit?
Yeah, and give your audience something new to talk about or share, yeah, or to get involved in.
Just change it up a little bit. People don't want to see the same thing all the time.
And I think there's a mix of both, isn't there? Like, they like to know what they're getting. They like to know what to expect from you, but also they like to be surprised by new things. It's definitely a fine balance between the two.
That's where the branding comes in, I think, as well. If you're using different colors on every post, different fonts and whatnot, people aren't going to recognize you. Whereas if you're sharing similar sort of content with your branding spot on, then people will recognize it's you, even if you change it up a little bit.
I love that. That's definitely a great point. So making sure that your branding is kind of synchronized.
Yeah.
Whatever that word is, a lot across all of your posts. So regardless of whether you're posting a meme or educational content or something inspirational, someone will know from looking at it that it's your post.
Exactly that, yeah.
I love that. And when, in your opinion, what are the best ways that people can use their content to further their reach? Like, what's, I don't know if I worded that correctly. So what was kind of going through my head was that if you want to go out and reach new audiences instead of, with our content, we want to nurture our existing audience, but we also want to reach new audiences. And how do you find the balance between doing that? And yeah, what's your kind of take on that?
I think there's a few different ways you can do it. Obviously, the nurture thing comes in, like making sure people know who you are, showing off your personality. If you know you're the face of the brand, then people want to see your face, want to talk to you, and sort of warming them up to what you actually sell. Like if you followed someone that just posts like loads of talking videos but never talks about their product, never shows off their product, never talks about what they do, then they're a cool person to follow because they talk a lot and they share a lot of cool stuff, but I don't know what you do, so you need to tell me what you do. It's like going into a restaurant and not having a menu. Like, how do you know what to order, you know? So making sure that you are, you know, being the face of the brand, if that's what you want to do, you don't have to, but also talking about what you're actually selling. So I, all of my clients, bar one, we, and on my own channels, I post 3 times a week. So one of them will always be sort of like a reach type post, whether it's a meme or a quote or like a dissection of something that's happening, like Taylor Swift, for example, like dissecting her marketing strategy, or something that I know people will enjoy and jump on. So that's like my reach piece. Then my second piece is always like a sales piece, whether it's like talking about a new offering, sharing some social proof, or talking about an existing offering and saying that I've got capacity or something new's coming or whatever. And then that third piece is kind of always up for, you know, whatever I need it to be, whether I'm like, okay, this week I could boost my reach a bit, so I'm going to do another reach boosting piece, or actually I need to sell another spot on this course, or need to sell another load of notebooks, like then it will be a sales piece. Or maybe it'll just be a meme, you know, maybe I've just found a meme that I'm like, this works really well, I'm going to share this, you know. So I always have a nurture piece and a reach piece, and then that third piece is always kind of depending on the goal for that week, or if I see something that I want to jump on.
I like that. You mentioned two things there that are like my favorite things to talk about. So you said that you post 3 times a week, which means that you post consistently 3 times a week. And I always talk to my clients about posting consistently over constantly, because it, for two reasons. One, I think the algorithm prefers it when you post consistently, and also your audience knows when to expect stuff from you. Yeah. And it's better to post less often, but do it consistently, than it is to try and post every day and end up not posting at all, because it feels too overwhelming when you don't do it.
Yeah, definitely. So I have an example of this. Recently, for my small business, I started posting on TikTok. Now, TikTok is not my forte at all as a marketer. It's a kind of platform that I just experiment on a bit and see what happens. But I started posting on TikTok like every day or twice a day or whatever. And then one of the videos got picked up and did go a little bit viral, if I do say so myself, which was nice. But after that point, I'm like, God, how do I keep this up? Like, I can't just drop off now. Like, what's going to happen? So after it is the consistency piece. And like all my videos that I've posted since that one that went a little bit viral have done well. And I think if I'd have stopped posting after that one video and then came back to it like 2 months later, it would have been like starting from scratch. Mm. Now, I'm not saying
making the most of the attention that it was getting.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not saying that you should, you know, just post to go viral, but that like tangible results really gives you that kick up the ass that you're like, ah, this does work. I do need to continue, because TikTok, I, you know, I'm a scroller, I'll scroll, but I've never been one to like post on TikTok. I don't do it for my clients. It's not my sort of area of expertise, but I know for small businesses it can have an impact. So I was like, right, okay, come on, pull your finger out, Lauren, you need to give it a go.
I love that.
So yeah, the consistency piece. And the same with Instagram, like because my small business has been doing really well recently, my marketing page has not been getting the attention it deserves. But because I have been posting consistently on there for what, like 3.5 years, even now that I've taken a little break from it, I'm still gaining followers. All my old content is still being engaged with. So I'm not like losing the community I have there, because I'm still active on stories every now and then. I'm still posting when I've got something to say, But because of all the work I've put in for the last 3.5 years, the consistency piece that I've been doing is helping now that I'm taking a little break from it.
Yeah, definitely. I think consistency wins over everything every time.
Absolutely.
So that was the first thing you said that I wanted to pull up on. And then the second thing was sales posts, which I think is something that business owners, we don't do enough.
No.
We don't talk about our offers enough. Like the amount of profiles that I'll look at and I'll be like, I don't actually know what you're selling me. Like you're doing X, Y, Z, but I don't know what I can buy from you. And putting a focus on creating sales posts and talking about your offer, I think should be at the forefront of everybody's content and strategy. I think it's something we forget about way too often.
Yeah. And I think there's two things here. Don't sell too much, but don't not sell. You know, like there's some people that will sell 5 different offers at once and they wonder why they're not getting any sales because their audience is fed up with being sold to. And then there's people that are not getting any sales because they're not talking about what they offer at all. So you need to find that like middle ground, one offer at a time, one launch at a time, have a really good sort of strong line for your piece, a good name, like talk about it as much as you can, but don't overdo it, you know? And then I would say like you can use that, like if you're doing a carousel, you can use that last slide. My favorite thing to do is add a PS, whether it's in a caption, in a carousel, in a reel, in an email, adding a little PS because people see it and they think, oh, what's this going to be? Because it's not expected, you know? And you can use that in so many different formats to be like, even if you're not talking about your offer, but the post has some connection to what you're offering in like the tiniest way, you can say like, PS, if you want more of this, get my ebook, or if you want to dig deeper, join my workshop, or blah, 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 whatever it may be. Like there can always be a subtle connection to it, but you don't have to talk about it 24/7.
Yeah, definitely. It's like almost a less like in your face way of selling. It's just a nice little note for them at the bottom of whatever the value is that you've just given them. Just a, hey, just in case you didn't already know, this thing is available for you to come and buy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's there. I think my favorite way to sell without selling is pinned posts on Instagram. On my Instagram, I have like a, if you're a marketer, start here, get to know me. And then if you're a business, start here. So that straight away, when new people land, they can identify as either a marketer or a business or both, and then figure out what the right route is for them. Even if they don't see, like my next few posts don't have any sales bits in them, they know on my profile they've got those options.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think it's quite an underutilized tool is the pinned posts on Instagram. Yeah, I don't feel like business owners are using them to their full potential. So just talk us through kind of what posts we might put there. Like what would be in that post that you, so where you said like if you're a marketer, come here, what might that post look like?
So I'll use mine as an example. My marketer one, so I have like a freelancer starter bundle, which is a bunch of Notion templates. So in the marketer start here one, it kind of breaks down the Notion bundle. And then the last slide is like a call to action comment. I can't even remember what it is now. Comment freelancer if you want it, or link in bio, whatever it is. And then the get to know me one is just like a bit of a breakdown of me, my journey, who I am, blah, 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 all the boring stuff. And then the business one breaks down my services. So I think it's like 5 or 6 slides long and it's got my 4 different packages and then how to get started.
I like that. So yeah, really making it simple for potential clients that are coming to your profile and giving them somewhere that they can go to immediately to see like who you are and what you do and how you can help them.
Yeah, exactly. Just and use that space, like, you know, what else are you going to use it for? It's going to be your top 3 most recent posts. What if they're pushed down another line? Like utilize those pinned posts. A lot of people use banners as well, which I do for a lot of my clients, which is helpful because it A, is aesthetically pleasing, and B, it's right at the top of your profile, so people are bound to see it. So that's another good way.
I like the banners. I think, like you said, they are very aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah,
and it kind of gives a like a starting place for your for your profile. So like you know that you're starting with a banner, it kind of gives you the detail that you need, and then you go down from there on the rest of the posts.
Exactly. And you know what you're going to get. You know, if they're launching a workshop or something and their banner is about a workshop, you know you're bound to see that workshop in a few different posts.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. And then they know what to expect and they know what's coming.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. So if we've got people listening that are feeling kind of overwhelmed by their content and their strategy and they're not really sure, they're kind of posting on and off, but there's no real strategy behind it, what would be your kind of first steps that they should do to kind of get a grasp of what content they should be posting and how they should manage that?
My first starting point would be figure out what format you're most comfortable with. And they say you should do one carousel, one reel, one this, one that. But I think the best place to start is the format you're most comfortable with. If you like making reels and talking to the camera, do that. If you don't and you prefer statics and graphics, do that. If you want to just write in your notes app and screenshot it and post it, do that. As long as you're saying something valuable, I don't think the format massively matters to begin with. It's just about getting to that place where you are being consistent. So that's the first thing I would say. And then the second thing is, going back to what we were saying earlier, like think about your the goals for the next 3 months. Do you want to sell out your offer? Do you want to launch something new? Do you want to, you know, boost your reach a little bit? Figure out what it is, and then you can figure out what sort of content you're going to need to hit that. Like if you're launching a new workshop, you need to think, okay, if the workshop is about how to save up for a house, then you need to think about what content fits into that. Like you're going to need to talk about ISAs probably, and savings accounts, and ways they can sort of cut back, or budgeting methods, or, you know, that's all the sort of content that is the sort of nurture content that gets them warmed up and thinks, oh, I want to know more about this. Let me see what else this person's got going on. And then they see the workshop and they're like, ah, okay. So that sort of stuff, like break it down into those bite-sized content pieces.
I like that. So I've seen this quite a lot with some of the bigger coaches that I have worked with, where for an entire month, all they'll talk about is one specific subject. And then at the end of that month, lo and behold, they launch a product that's related to that subject that they've been talking about. But it makes sense, because for an entire month, you've got your audience interested in whatever it is subject. And then at the end of the month, you're like, hey, that thing I've been talking about for an entire month, I actually have a product that can help you with that. And I really like that as a strategy, because I think it makes it easier to create content, because you know that you're talking about this one subject. So obviously the example that you gave was buying a house, like you're talking about this one subject for an entire month, everything that you can think about for this particular subject. And then at the end of the month, you're launching a product related to that subject. So from the whole time, your audience have been like warmed up to it. They've started thinking about the problems that they've got to do with that subject. And then you come in with a solution for it. And I think it's such an interesting and clever way of kind of creating your content.
Yeah. And you've got to think about it. Like, you've given them a month's worth of free content, right? Imagine what they would give you if you paid for it.
I love that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
If I'm posting about this one topic like twice a week, that's what, like 8 posts a month, plus stories, plus any chats in the DMs that I'm going to be having about this topic. And then at the end of the month, I'm like, oh, actually, for £25, you can come to my workshop. And they're like, oh, £25, that's a bargain. And I've learned all of this stuff from her in the last 30 days. So obviously, I'm going to sign up.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like a more cohesive content strategy, I think, as well, because everything kind of fits together. And then the next month, when you're moving on to a different launch with a different product, you can pivot and start talking about the problems related to that subject.
Yeah, I think as long as you're not going from like how to buy a house to how to mow the lawn, then, you know, as long as they have like connections, or whether it's like how to buy a house and then budgeting methods, like, cool. But yeah, it's like, as long as everything is in the sort of same sort of sphere, which it is, if you've got a business, I'm sure you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not going from buying a house to like how to crochet. Like, it's a bit different.
Exactly.
For me, it would be things like smashing your sales target and then moving on to like lead generation. Like, it would be those things.
Sort of world. Yeah,
exactly. I love that. There was one more thing I was going to ask you, which was to do with, you said about picking the type of content that works for you, which I think is a great strategy, doing, especially if you're kind of new to content creation, or you're not feeling the love with it, like picking the thing that works best for you. So whether that is the talking reels or the static posts or whatever, whichever one that you pick. But when it comes to like creating the static posts, they're not my favorite. I much prefer doing like talking reels. I'm really comfortable in front of the camera. I find them a lot less effort to do because they don't involve lots of creation, like you just record it and it's done. But for the static posts, how important do you think the look and feel of them is versus the content that's actually inside them?
Bit of both. I think, again, going back to the branding, it has to be on brand. You have to be using those consistent colors, fonts, logo, if you have one, you know, it has to be consistent in that form. And then the content, my biggest pet peeve is blocks of copy in carousels. So I just don't, people won't read them, to be blunt. Bullet points, And like, I would say no more than a couple of sentences per slide. And then if you have got more to say on the topic, you've got that whole caption where you can dive deeper, or you've got the call to action where you can push them towards a blog or a YouTube video or another post or to chat in the DMs or whatever. So I would keep content on carousels and statics short and sweet. Mm-hmm. And just break it up. Like, if you've got a lot to say, you've got, I think you can now post like 20 slides in a carousel. So you've got 20 slides worth of pages where you can be talking. So just break it up. If you use those 20 slides, so what? You know, people get to the end, amazing.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't realize you could do so many now. That's fab.
I think it used to be 10. I'm sure it's 20 now. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a similar thing to like in the corporate world when you were doing like PowerPoint slides and there's too many words on the slide. Like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, you're not going to read that entire carousel slide if it's just a whole block of text. So take out the bits that are important and that are eye-catching and that are going to make people want to swipe to the next one.
Yeah. And don't forget as well, within carousels, you can use video too. So if you want to have like a little embedded video where you just break it down in 10 seconds, then you can do that too. You can mix the formats together, which I think is nice. You know, if you're not comfortable talking on camera for like a minute or 30 seconds or whatever it is, but you are for like a 10 second snippet where you can put it alongside some copy and some, you know, aesthetically pleasing things, then you should try it. Just mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it? Just giving it a go, doing something that you're comfortable with and seeing if it works. And if it doesn't work, try again, do something slightly different until you figure out what works both for you as the person that's posting it, but also what works for your audience and what they resonate with.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm not a Reels lover. I don't love talking in front of the camera. Like you, well, opposite of you, I find that Reels take me a lot longer because I have to record it 20 times and then edit it and all of that jazz. So, and my audience is used to me posting carousels now. So when I post a reel, 9 times out of 10, it flops because it's not the sort of content that my audience is used to. And the same with my small business. Some reels will do really well and I'm like, oh, let me try that again. And then I try it again, it doesn't work. So I think it's figuring out what your audience is used to and what you enjoy. Like we said, like, don't, if you're recording a reel and you're uncomfortable and not enjoying it, it is probably going to show. On the reels.
I'm really comfortable in front of the camera. I've spent the last 10 years in corporate on video calls, so filming reels feels really natural for me. But like, the fact that you don't like doing that, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing negative about the fact that you don't like doing them. Like, it just, it's about figuring out what works for you and your business, and whatever strategy that is perfectly okay.
And if you don't like filming reels but you do find that your audience like enjoys them, then practice makes perfect, right? Just keep cracking at it until you feel comfortable or find a setting that feels natural, whether it's like in front of your living room window or booking out like a WeWork office or something and just cracking at it for a day, like whatever makes you feel happy. And if your audience love it, then you might just have to buckle down and get on with it. But just practice makes perfect. Just keep trying.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a few clients that have said that same thing where they don't love getting in front of the camera. And we started with like B-roll videos. Yeah. So if you don't talk, just you're in the video and start like get kind of stepping stone your way into it. So video yourself doing something. So whether it's working in front of your laptop, but you don't have to talk, and then work your way up to talking in front of the camera. And like you said, just try it again and again. The good thing about filming a reel is that it's not live. You can delete it and do it again.
Yeah. Or even like on Zoom, like for the practice, just like practice doing it on a Zoom or a Google Meet where it just feels like you're talking to someone else like this. Rather than like setting up your tripod and putting the lights on, and it feels quite intimidating at first, like whereas a Google Meet call or whatever is probably a lot more relaxed. And like, don't feel like you have to dress up for it either. I think a lot of people are like, oh, I can't film a reel today because I haven't got any makeup on, or I've got pasta down my top. And it's like, okay, maybe change your top, but you don't need to like glam up to do these videos. People, that's just not realistic. I don't think we're not filming like a Hollywood movie, you know.
And also, you don't want to have to put that effort in every time, because if you only ever post reels where you are completely glammed up, it means that you won't ever post a reel like on the fly. If you think of something that you want to say, or you're not at home with your amazing studio setup, you're not going to want to record a reel because the way that you've kind of laid them out before. So yeah, I definitely agree that just do them as you are. And also, you show up so much more authentically. Just be yourself.
Yeah. I find as well, I generally have ideas for reels when I'm driving. So then when I park in a car park, I'm like, right, okay, let me just get this over and done with real quick. And they do better than when I'm like set up with a light, sat on a nice chair, you know, like the ones where I'm just like walking or in a car park or whatever it may be, just do better because they do, like you say, feel more authentic.
Yeah, as if you like you have, you've just thought of an idea, you've recorded it and you've posted it. That's what it, that comes across in the video.
It's real.
Yeah. I see what you did there. But yeah, it feels a lot more genuine to the people that are watching it.
Yeah, exactly that.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been so good chatting to you.
And you, it's been lovely.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. My three key takeaways would be to plan your content in advance. But like Lauren said, up to 2 weeks at a time is fine so that you can be more spontaneous and reactive with things that are happening on social media. You don't need to plan 6 months of content out ahead of time. My second one would be to make sure that all of your posts have the same look and feel so that regardless of whether you're posting a reel or a carousel post or a static post, the audience that are looking at it will recognize it as your content. So make sure that that brand's really strong and that the colors are the same as you move through the different pieces. And the third one would be to do what you enjoy so that you can do it consistently. So regardless of what you're posting, pick something that you like posting. Don't pick something just because you think somebody else has told you to post it. So whether it's reels or carousel posts, whatever it is that you like posting, pick that first so that you know you can stay consistent with it, because consistency is the key. Thank you so much. I will see you next time.